Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? I'm James Lopez, and welcome back to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast. Those that know me know that politics and I, well, sometimes we don't mesh too good. I like to say that I don't do politics, even though my wife says that I do it well. But I found someone that really puts in work for the dads in the political arena, and you know I had to bring him on to talk to us. Not only is he a dad, but he is also the executive director of the Commission on Fathers, Men, and Boys for the D.C.'s mayor office. What's good, Jason Wallace? What's good? How are you?
What's going on? Thanks for having me on.
Yo, man. You know, the first time I met you, man, I think it was definitely at Dad 2.0. We had a nice little conversation off the record. and I think I told you, you know, I try to stay away from politics and politicians. But I got to say, man, you're the first person that I actually talked to in the political world in the past 10 years that I actually felt, man.
I appreciate you, bro.
I appreciate you. I think you kept it super real at the conference. You talked to everybody. Yeah, it was genuine, man. That's a blessing, man. Thank you.
No, I mean, it was a great conference. And I think the part about being political is just at the end of the day, everybody's people. Yeah. And, you know, I get it. So it was definitely great to chat with you. And I love to do more of those conferences.
Yeah, man. So yeah, man. You know, you got that nice little fancy title, bro. Like, what? Congrats. But what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. So it's actually the mayor's office. It's an office now. We were a commission. Uh-huh. We're no longer a commission. We have a commission, but we're it's a fancy long title.
mayor's Wait, politics
on fathers, men, and boys. It's not the longest title I've ever had before. But it's very definitely a long one. But I like to just say the men's office, right? So yeah. The men's office, we advocate for men in the District of Columbia. We also run programming, and it's also our role to work within larger agencies to make sure that it's equitable for men in the district. There's also a women's office for the ladies that's listening. There's a women's office on mayor's office on women's policy and initiatives that does the exact same thing for women. We have an office of African-American affairs, Latino affairs, religious affairs. And essentially it's I am the voice of men, specifically men of color in the district to where I'm advocating for issues and programs for them.
Yeah. Nah. And you're advocating strong, man. I love it. Like,
I'm trying.
How many kids do you got? Do you just have one?
I got one son who just turned 3 last week, and then I haven't told HR yet, so hopefully they're not listening, but I got one on the way.
Oh, we got the breaking news, man.
Breaking news.
Congrats.
Thank you. I'm going to be a girl dad, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, but you've been fighting for dads before you even had your 3-year-old, huh?
I mean, that's true. I mean, it's been in different ways. Before, I was at a nonprofit that gave it's just being about being equitable, right? People think that, you know, like one thing is that like the legal system when it comes to men that are trying to see their children, right? That's a huge issue. So that may not be as equitable as I would like it to be now. There's also issues around like nonprofits and programming and ensuring like, and I know a lot of nonprofits like supporting women and children, but instead of focusing on women and children, what that tends to do is that it excludes the father, it excludes the family. Mm-hmm. I met a woman one time that told me that she had to hide her father, that was the game that they had to play growing up because they didn't qualify. They wouldn't have qualified to live in the community that they lived in if their father was in the household. Oh, and yeah. They lived so close to the management office that it would always be him sneaking in and out every single day. And there's so many issues that not affect just men, but just families in general.
Yeah. Why do you think we need different groups for each different sector? Like I know the answer somewhat, right? But I would love to hear why you think that we need to have like an office for men and then an office for women, then an office for Latinos, an office for Black. Like, why is that?
I mean, because there's different issues for different folks, right? And then it allows, I think that when you look at government, that every, like, it's the goal of the mayor, let's say, or the president, is to help everybody, mm-hmm. right? And if you look at it from a macro lens, and it's great to do that, but you may be missing out on a few communities that are unheard. And one of the things you see is that when you look at a community, we have these things called ANC meetings, right? Where they're like community gatherings, and the community comes out, and the community that may come out, you may get the loudest voices in the room, but not necessarily the most voices, right? Yeah. So if you look at some of the ANC commission meetings, they may not have a lot of like Blacks or Latinos in particular areas, even though that Blacks and Latinos make up a large population in D.C. But, you know, they're always in the evening. So let's say some folks work at night that they could never attend. Yeah. So our role is to be able to make sure that we're in the communities. We're actually listening to the community. We're here. We're the mayor's ear and eyes on the ground. And we also work with creating partnerships to where when we advise the mayor on programs and initiatives or things people she should be meeting with and talking to and places she should be going, she has a full spectrum of not just a macro lens, but a micro lens from different communities. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily for our community, but for Lakhla, the Asian and Pacific Islander community, there's language access barriers. And for other communities, it's just different things. So making sure that you have somebody that understands what those needs are and that can address them very directly.
Yeah, it's all about representation, right? Like having the right people represent. Like you said, like you have people in the room that are super loud, but they might not be representing your needs. So it's cool to like separate it. But all of that takes a lot of money, especially like public money, right? Like, are you the buffer between fatherhood and the mayor?
I wouldn't say there was a buffer. I think the mayor Bowser is very involved in, I wouldn't say just fatherhood programming, but all programming.
All programs.
She really cares about the issues. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a buffer, but I am the advisor in all issues related to men's and boys' issues, including fatherhood. But the fact that she felt it necessary to create an initiative specifically around fatherhood is awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of cities don't have it. I mean, you see women's offices all throughout the nation, but very few have men's offices. And mayors that push for men's offices, which she was the first one that the first mayor of D.C. that created this office, and it's a commission. And then our office is through a mayoral order that she signed because she knew the importance and the need of it.
Mm-hmm. And so now I talking to a lot of dads and working with a lot of dad groups across America, I'm noticing that a lot of the groups are ran by women, not men. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed the same thing? And why do you think that is?
I don't know. I have not noticed that, but I do know when the mayor's office on women's policy and initiatives has an event, there's a ton of women that show up. And then when we have an event, it's not as many men. I think it's just it's harder to get men to come out or to trust government or, you know, also, you know, it's the stigmas around some of the things. So what we try to do is that we try to meet men where they are. Right. So we don't have like the women's office has a series that they do where they have women come up there and talk about, just entrepreneurship, and there's a ton of women in the room. They do an amazing job. What we do is we host a show called The Manuscript, and it's on our Instagram and our Facebook page, facebook.com/The Manuscript Show, and we allow it to be more equitable in the sense of you can just watch it on Facebook. You can just watch it on Instagram. You don't have to physically go anywhere.
And that's,
we felt that
that's
finding,
both for male
go ahead.
And female? Is that both
for
both
parties? That's from our office.
Okay.
From our office,
okay.
We do just males. But like instead of having an event where people can come to, we also have those as well. We partnered with Google on a thing called Legacy Speaks about generational wealth building, where we can fill a crowd of 150 people in a room at capacity. But we also have opportunities for people to go online and look for things simply there. So, but yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot of it, but I do believe that it exists. But yeah,
I mean, I'm glad that you've noticed the difference between male and females when it comes to being present at these events. Like, I don't know if it's a pride thing, if we're just too busy, or like you said, like maybe lack of trust in the government. But I could tell you this, that even if we're hosting an event through Fatherhood is Lit, it's much harder to get the males in the room. Like it's yep. I think it has something to do with like our pride. Where like, we don't want other men telling us like how to father, and it's like, yo, that's not the point. The point is to have a safe place for us.
Yeah, and when I tell people, even if it's not about being how to father, you might, because I don't believe the person that's always on stage has the knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Like the person that's in the room, that you might meet somebody there that can build a relationship and a mentorship, that it might be you mentoring somebody else. So by you not going to one of these events, you're not just taking from yourself or your family, you're taking from somebody else's family and somebody else that could be benefiting from what you have to offer. So if you don't go for yourself, you know, if you're not going for yourself, go for somebody else. Yeah. But, you know, it's people that need to know how to be a father, that you might just have some wisdom that you can offer.
Yeah, and it's true, man. Like what you did in the room, this is the reason why I was messing with you. And it's because usually when I go to these conferences, everybody chases like the real cool kids or the guys that they think are on top of the world when it comes to like content and fatherhood. And I tell my people, especially people of color, when you go to these conferences, don't chase the cool kids, chase the regular people, the ones that are actually putting in the work, you know, the groundwork. Because sometimes you could be on stage and it's because you got a million followers. It's not because you actually did anything. You know what I mean? And it's
crazy. At the conference, I dressed down. You saw me. I had on jeans. I had on like a bubble vest. Like typically, I'm in a suit and tie. But like,
you're it's regular.
So important that like, it's so important. And I was having conversations, and some people were, you know, were cool, and some people were like, you know, kind of. Then when I handed them my business card, they were like, "Oh, you're the executive director at the mayor's office." And it's like, well, I mean, I don't think it's so dangerous to take value from a job, right? Yeah. Like I believe in myself as a father, as a male, as a man, as a husband, and the title that somebody else gave me does not add or take away from that value. Mm-hmm. Because if you start believing that title or whatever somebody gave you is that makes you feel more special, that it'll imagine how it'll make you feel if they take it away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. So it's like they put too much weight on the title.
Just too much weight. I don't take this. No title has any weight. I believe that, you know, I'm going to do the best job of you title me the janitor, or if you title me the CEO. And I'm excited about, you know, when I go places. Like one of the things, I'm not sure if you've seen my page, when I go places, I'm very approachable, down to earth. I was with a kid, oh, you see on my page, I was with a kid, he said he wanted to be a rapper. And me and him had a rap cypher right there on the spot. Like I don't let this suit and tie fool you. I can go in too. So, and letting people, and I think what it does is that it builds that trust, right? Because they don't see this government figure with this pen coming in saying these talking points. They see this guy, I'm still in a suit and tie. But I'm coming in there, I'm talking to the community, I'm serving food, I'm rapping. Like I'm rapping with the kids, because at the end of the day, when I need to tell you something, now trust me, because this guy knows how to spit some bars. So, you know.
Yeah, no, it's true. You became relatable to the people, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's my goal.
I get the same thing where I, you know, I meet up with, you see the way I'm dressed, I'm always in a hat and a t-shirt, you know, representing the brand. Mm-hmm. And I meet with some really, really big people. And when I go into their offices, it's funny because sometimes their secretaries or their administrative assistants will look at me funny. They'll be like, you know, like take off your hat, or, you know, who are you here for? Who are you here to see? And then when their boss calls me to get me, and they be like, "Yo, that's James from Fatherhood Is Lit." They're like, "Oh snap, like my bad." And I just give them that look, like, "Yeah, you messed up."
I get the same thing all the time, even when I do it in a suit.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't want to get too far in this, but it was actually a time where I was detained by law enforcement on an event that I was running because they didn't believe that I was staff. So it wasn't here; it was a different job.
Ooh, that's crazy, and it was still in politics, right? It was still in the public sector?
Yeah, still in public. I mean, it's already in the papers, so I'll share it here. But it was at when I was at the White House. I worked at the White House, and I traveled with the president and first lady. And
which
police officers did not. I started with Bush and then left and then came back on with Obama, but it happened under the Obama administration. Mm. And it's an article about it. It's all in the paper. I think what it is that, like, and I do believe I'm a big proponent of, you know, dressing the way you dress for success and dressing the way you want to be perceived. But like, if you go to a grocery store, if you're like getting followed, it doesn't matter what title you have. If you're not, you know, I was followed around at Jose A. Bank one time. Like it just happens.
While you're getting your suits on, bro, they still chasing you around. That's messed up.
I actually had my 8-year anniversary 2 days ago.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. You ain't got the little button. You hit the applause button.
Man, I'm not Joe Buttons, man. I don't want Spotify chasing me down. I did want an air horn, but I don't want to throw people off too much yet.
It was for my me and my groomsmen went in to go get fitted for tuxedos, and I followed around the store, and it turned into a whole scene. But like, that's why it's so important that like titles don't adjust, because you know, I could be, for instance, when I was traveling with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, like when I would go into low income communities, I wouldn't wear a suit because you just stand out too much. So I would always dress down. And you see how people treat you sometimes, right? You see how people treat you?
Yeah, like you're in opposition. Like
if you treat me this way, imagine how you're treating somebody else who ain't gonna show up tomorrow with the cabinet member dressed in a suit and tie. And that can, you know, it could affect people's, you know, self-esteem. It could affect how they father their children because they, you know, they feel like they need to get value from somewhere else. They got to be tougher or more masculine so they can kind of get some respect. And it's like, I don't care if you respect me or not. Like, I don't, like your respect is not important to me.
Yeah. I'm bringing value. And that's, you know, that's what's important. So what made you go into the public sector? Like, I'm pretty sure the community knows too, like between the wages are much different with the public sector and the private sector, but we need
much
people like
different.
You, we need people like you fighting the good fight. So what made you go into the public sector, bro? Like, woke up and say, yo, I'm going to go help people.
So it's the public. I mean, also, like, I still started a nonprofit too. So, like, what it is that, like, I'm from San Bernardino, California, right? And a lot of people don't know where that is. For those that's listening, it's east of Los Angeles. It's actually bigger than Los Angeles. It's the largest county in the nation. People don't know that. Mm-hmm. It's more known for like a terrorist attack that happened a few years back. Yeah. But what it's less known for is that it's over half the people who live there, as I was growing up, lived on government assistance, right? It's been bankrupt for years. It is on the top five list of places that it's hardest to find a job. It's also has a higher murder per capita rate than Chicago. So I grew up in this environment. You hear about Chicago is like 13th on the list. San Bernardino is like 4 or 3. So I grew up in this environment. This environment has shaped me, and I would not have been able to succeed in life to where I am today had it not been for all the nonprofits, had been to all the government agencies, all the people that were support, and the Dope Boys that were supporting me to kind of lift me. They who saw something in me to kind of lift me up out of that, right? And I was able to get the key to the city from San Bernardino, from the mayor, after I achieved some success. But, you know, long story short, I was, you know, in third grade, we all wrote a letter to the president, and that was like the class assignment. And then when I got the letter back from the president, I wanted to work in the White House. So, you know, fast forward, when I was at Howard University, I applied online for an internship. And I actually got it within the Bush administration. I worked in the Office of Freedom Corps, which focuses on volunteerism, giving back to the community. So this has always been my passion.
Yeah, that's your thing.
That's my thing. You know, even when I was, you know, start the nonprofit, it's experiential learning, helping kids learn about careers by playing activities and games. Like I believe that like money will come and go, but when I go home at night and I feel like I made a difference in this world, There's no better joy. There's no better joy than that. So, I've been able to work in programs that feed people, 350 people a day. I've been able to run programs that actually clothe thousands of people a month, and shape programs that really impact and help people that I'll never have the opportunity to meet. So being in government, in federal government, I get to do it, but I don't get to actually see the people. It's just, you know, I get to, you know, create things and I hear about it and it's a number on a paper. But in the local government, I get to see these people.
Yeah.
My phone number is on the website.
Yeah, you get to touch them. You can see them at a conference. You can see them on the street. Like,
people just call me sometimes, like, hey, I saw this thing. And I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? I'm I'm big on having my cell phone numbers and my business card. I try to be as accessible as possible. And I got a team that, you know, will do stuff as well. But I try to be as accessible as possible because I want to hear it. I want to hear the good things and the bad things.
Yeah, no, that's dope, because that, you know, that just gives me another reason to mess with you some more. You know what I mean? And that's the same way I believe. Like I could, you know, I came from the tech scene. We all know the money that could be made in the tech scene. You know, I'm one of the 1% with a master's in computer science. You know what I mean? I'm a unicorn in this world. But my duty right now is to help dads, especially dads of color, because I came from the hood and my dad was the dad to everybody. You know what I mean? Yeah. He didn't become rich, but he got a lot of love from people because he took care of a lot of kids. You know what I mean? Yeah. Kids that weren't his. And that's why I appreciate people like you, especially in the public sector.
Well, thank you. I mean, I can't even take full credit, because Mayor Bowser's big on that. She was like, hey, I don't want to see you in the office every day. Like, you need to be out there. That was one thing she was big on, making sure that I was out there, making sure that I was in the community, making sure that, you know, letting her know where to go, what to do, and what the needs were. So I mean, she's allowed me to, like, she's given me so much bandwidth to create, like, the Flip the Script campaign, where we highlighted positive images of Black and brown fathers on buses and trains throughout the city, which you partnered with us on. So thank you for that.
No doubt.
She gave us the ability to create a paternal workshop session, where we actually have lawyers there on site, and men can come in and non-custodial guardians can come in and actually talk to a lawyer about their specific issue at no cost, and have job placements on site to get people jobs that are having issues paying back child support. So like, these are just ideas that I've spoken to the community about and was able to craft, and she was 100% behind. The web series, the wealth building seminars, we're doing a fatherhood class with inside of the DC jail, where men that are incarcerated that currently see their children once every 3 months. They've allowed me to create a program that would allow them to see their children once every month if they go inside this fatherhood class. And it's going to be crazy packed when we have it. There'll be so many men that just want to be good fathers.
Wow.
And because you're incarcerated does not take away your right as a father.
That's crazy though, man. Like, you just brought something up, the incarcerated dads. So they only get to visit their kids only get to visit them once every 3 months, compared to like other family members that could do it like once a month. Is that the way it is?
It's certain, and I don't want to get too far into the jail weeds, because
we don't really know that.
This. But in DC there are different units, and then one of the units specifically can only see their kids once every 3 months.
Okay, and then fighting to get them to do once a month, as long as they have like these traits in them. Yeah. All right. That's dope, man. I love that. So how did the Flip the Script campaign start? Like, what motivated you to fight for that?
I mean, the same thing that motivates you, right? It started, you know, the fatherhood is lit, and I see a lot of other influencers out there that are like Swagger Dad is awesome. The Dag. I mean, I see a lot of them that are doing a lot of stuff, right? And it's just the images and the portrayals of Black and brown men in the media are overrepresented as either being violent criminals or as being not fathers to their children. Specifically, immigrants are seen as being gangsters 50% of the time in the media, which is wild.
I'm surprised it's 50%, man, because, you know, I walk through a super white neighborhood in New York City, and I'm pretty sure the ratio goes up to like 90%, where they definitely look at me as either I'm a gangster or I'm a drug dealer, one of the two.
And that's the thing, right? So let's say so people think that issues are just positive images, and it's not, right? There are real life implications and consequences to these things, right? So when you're walking down the street and a person that lives in this neighborhood who may not have any Black friends, who may not have any Hispanic friends, those images that they see in the media becomes their reality, because it's their only touch point with an entire group of people. So it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous as it relates to police officers, right? If you look at the rates of how Black and Hispanics get stopped and Native Americans actually for that versus white counterpart, white males. Also for judges, they give harsher sentences out for Black and brown men. Nationwide, this is nationwide. This isn't D.C. This is nationwide for the same crimes. Teachers, Black boys are being suspended from school at a much higher rate as young as kindergarten than white boys. Like these are good, usually God-fearing, liberal people that are not racist. These are people that in their subconscious that they've been trained over a period of time to view a group of people a certain way because that's all they see All you see is these negative images. And to say that it doesn't work that way is to say that advertising doesn't work.
Yeah.
Advertising
works.
$1 billion industry.
That shit
works,
man.
You put up images of McDonald's cheeseburgers over and over and over again. Guess who's going to want a cheeseburger from McDonald's?
Like, yep, my kids.
Your kids, and you're going to be spending your money. So it's just, advertising just works that way.
Yeah.
So for us to have, I mean, we had 344 ads we put up in DC alone on the metro stations, trains. It was everywhere. We made it so unavoidable to you have to see these images of these black and brown fathers just being fathers to their children. And it has like the ward they lived in, the name of the person there. People were seeing people that they recognize in this campaign. And then, you know, the presidential candidate, a former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Julian Castro, jumped in and he jumped into the Flip the Script campaign and posted up his photo. Presidential candidate and Senator Cory Booker jumped in and posted up their photos. D.O. Hughley jumped in, Jeff Johnson, and somebody posted on Redman. Like it just took off and it became more nationwide. And it was mostly because, I mean, a lot of the work is, you know, of course, Mayor Bowser, but a lot of the influencers like you who helped push it out and get these negative images and this change the narrative on black fatherhood, because the CDC reports that it is inaccurate.
Yeah, it is.
It's completely inaccurate in that black fathers are actually in their children's lives more than other races.
It's true. I've seen the facts.
and even if it's not the humanity of it, of constantly showing, even in books, people send us books. Like my son gets books all the time from just people who send us some books for us to read. Any book that has a black mother without a black father, it doesn't have a whole family in it. Like I don't even go that route. Like
because you don't want to constantly present that to him, because then he's gonna start questioning.
Because it's not reality.
Yeah,
like it's not reality. I really read one of these bunny books to him. I'm not doing it. So it's just, and it's something that's important to me as a father. And also somebody that I also have a amazing father in my life. And then I have three brothers who are also amazing fathers. We go back and forth on each other about we might laugh at each other about like your shoes or this, or you're ugly, you the stupid one in the family. But like, as it relates to fatherhood, we're all top notch. So it's not a representation that a lot of people have and what they see. So it needed to be done.
Nah, I love it. I love it. And I love being part of that. You know, dads don't really need trophies for the works that they do. But yeah. I would love to know what were some of the reactions of the dads that were actually on the buses and on the train during this campaign. Like, were there some tears? Were there hugs? Like, what was like one of the most memorable things that you remember from this campaign, like when, in regards to a dad actually seeing himself?
I would say, so a couple of things, right? So number one thing, we hit 20 million impressions just off the ads alone. This is not... I didn't even call you to see like how many you posted and what were your numbers on the ads as you posted. So we don't even know what the influencers hit. Mm-hmm. But just through our efforts, we were able to count 20 million. And it's still up. Like it's 20 million per month. I mean, 20 million per month.
Nah, and we're still tagging away. Like people are still using the hashtag. They're still tagging away because it's part of the movement now, man.
It's part of the movement. Yeah. It's still currently up at Gallery Place Chinatown on the huge screens there. They gave us those for 10 months. We had them. So I think the biggest reaction I've had was, I would say, from my son. That was my biggest reaction. We were driving down the street, and he's big enough to roll the window down on his own. And he looked out the window, and he said, "Daddy, that's Jackson." His name is Jackson. He said, "That's Jackson. That's you. And he was so excited to see himself on a huge image on the side of a bus. That probably was like a big moment for me in fatherhood, to know that it's not just me, that all these other men got to show their children themselves on the side of a bus. But we've gotten, we didn't use stock images. We used real photos. So people are seeing their friends, their family members, their classmates on these buses. And also we had some folks that used the hashtag, because on the ad it says, you know, join the movement by uploading your fatherhood photo with the hashtag Flip the Script. And we got over 500 in DC alone where people are uploading their photos, and every single, I made a commitment early, like, hey, we're going to share every single photo, because I didn't think it would be a lot.
And it killed you. So
I remember my associate director, Michael, he spent literally, after Castro posted, he spent about 4 to 5 hours straight just sharing photos, just constantly. It was that many photos that came in. And I would spend an hour into an hour and a half every single morning sharing photos, every single morning. And then the mayor's team started sharing them on the mayor's page. It got so big, it was just dominating our day. We were kind of excited when it ended, and then the movement's still going, but the campaign came down, so less images pop up. But it was so many images that came across our screen that it would take us hours per day just to be sharing all of them. Mm-hmm. And it was good to see. I mean, because it was crazy how many people I see in the community, like, hey, I saw you on the Flip the Script, because I was personally, because it was so many, we couldn't, everybody took some. So I took all of Instagram, Michael took Twitter, a guy named Sebastian took the mayor's page. So it was like we all were doing them together. So I would see anybody that did it on Instagram, I saw every single photo. Every single photo I saw, I shared every single photo every single time. I tagged the mayor to all of them. I think she saw all of them. She got tagged to every single photo. So it's, and people would hit me up and say, like, hey, like, I wake up in the morning excited about seeing the images you're going to be posting tomorrow. Like, it was like people were looking at it as like their Monday motivation. It was every single day.
How crazy is that, though? Like, how crazy is that people hit you up to say, I'm expecting these photos because they inspire you? Because I get these messages every day from people, and it never gets old, bro. It never gets old. Like,
it
I love
it. Never gets old. It never gets old. And I mean, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, we're looking for 2.0. We're hoping with some additional partners to make it nationwide this year coming up in September. So that's our goal, is to have it nationwide this year and do a much larger photo shoot. Some people were reaching out like, hey, I didn't know about the photo shoot. We put it out there, but some people didn't see it. But I think this year it's going to be dozens of people coming out trying to get on the side of this bus.
did you have any friends that said that, you don't got to shout them out, you don't got to say their name, but that when you told them I'm doing the Flip the Script campaign, I'm gonna have your picture on a bus, they said, nah, man, we good. And then 2 weeks later, come back and be like, dogs, you didn't tell me it was gonna be like this.
I had a lot of folks like that. But I have some other folks that saw the vision. I remember Johnny Bailey. He's at Google, and he runs the Shine Hard Foundation. I remember I met him briefly and was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And this is before I even had the money to do it. It was just like off a vision. And he was like, I'm there. And his wife was expecting their child, I think that week. Or like it was either that week or the next week. Uh-huh. And he brings in this 9.5 month pregnant wife. And they do this photo, and it's the only shoot where there's no child in it. It's just, he's kissing her belly, and I think they left, and I think 3 days later they had a child. Wow. It's like 3 days later, 4 days later. And he was able to see his image with their child on the huge screen, which is like one of the largest screens in the city in downtown D.C. It's on a huge screen out there, which is another place we haven't calculated those numbers yet because they're still going. So it'll probably be way more than 20 million. Yeah. But like some people saw the vision. Some people saw the vision. I mean, one of our commissioners, Silas Grant, came out, and it was the first day he had been with his daughter by himself. His wife was out of town, and he shows up. Usually he's in a suit and tie. He had on a hoodie.
He was ready to represent.
He was exhausted. He said he was up all night long with this little girl who would not go to sleep. And he was just so tired, but it was that important for him to be there. That's and he was there, he took his photos, and he went right back home. And he was on the side of a bus. So we had another guy, Mike, my friend Mike Wordy, who I met at a daycare, when you go in to learn about open house. I met him briefly. I kind of chatted with him a little about what we were doing, and he was like, but it was after that we'd already taken all the photos. We were already done. And I told him, like, hey, I'm working on this thing. And he was like, really? How do I get involved? I'm like, well, we already took the photos. He's like, oh, man, I really would love to do that. And then like 3 days later, he hit me up and said, hey, if I were to take photos, if I were to hire my own photographer and take photos like the photos that you guys took, would you use the pictures? And I said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I sent him one of the pictures, a couple of the pictures that we had already done, and he hired his own photographer just to take the photos.
He wanted to make sure it was perfect. Back.
And he's like, does this work? He's like, the photographer's here. Does this work? I can take it again. And I'm like, yep, this
is
perfect.
He was fully in.
This is perfect.
He was fully in.
And, I put his train. He had the largest ad, right? It was on one of the metro stations, and it covered the entire stairwell. It was so big. And I said, hey, man, your photo is on the stairwell at this metro station. It was the largest ad. He went out there. The photographer went out there and was so excited to see his face with his daughter on that ad. And it meant so much to him. It meant so much to him. And it was a movement that went well beyond the buses, because some of these guys are friends now. And it was just amazing to see. So we had some great stories before, during, and afterward. We're still getting stuff. We still get people hitting us up about that.
Yeah, no, you know, images last forever, man. And you put them in the right place, that thing not only blows up, it stays in somebody's head. And when it's one of their friends that they get to see on there, it's like, wait, like, this person didn't get, you know, I didn't say that they didn't get paid for these things. I don't know if they got paid or not. But
nah, they didn't get paid.
Oh, they didn't get paid. Somebody, somebody will look at the photo and be like, yo, even if that person got paid, that's really dumb. Like, that's their style. Maybe. Like, they father. And you know what I mean?
And at the point, I didn't have the money for it. I didn't have the funding for it, because the funding comes from the year before.
Yeah.
So the guy that was in before me, he didn't have the initiative. So I didn't have the funding.
Wasn't in the budget. Yeah,
so
it wasn't in the budget.
I wasn't in the budget.
Yeah.
So, like, the photographer did it for free. The videographer did it for free. Everybody did it at no cost on a Saturday. They all came out. They edited it down. Everything. Yeah. Nothing was paid for.
That's the importance of the vision and representation, because you gave people our opportunity to represent a part of the culture that we don't get to see. And people love to have not only ownership of things, they like to push positive things. And that's a positive thing. So they're going to bow down and say, you know what? Like, I know you can't cover my fees. I got you anyway, because this is bigger than my fee. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's huge. I think, like, for me, it's like, I stand there with my son all day, man. Just take mad photos. Like, yo, look at your dad up there, man. Like, what's up?
But as a gift, we made sure that all of them got their photos as a gift. Typically, people have to pay for their own photos. They all got that as a gift. And then what they don't know yet, we're going to have a manuscript, flip the script. Manuscript is the web series we do around mental health. We're going to have a big party. And we're going to blow all those images up and put them on easels, and then we're going to let them take it home with them so they can keep it forever. So
that's going to be sick, man. That means a lot, man. That means a lot for people. So now you've done some really cool things, man. And you actually got to do some really cool things with one of my favorite people, man, Barack Obama. How does it feel knowing that you could tell your son, yo, I work with the country's first black president? Like, how dope is that, man?
It's dope. I mean, I would say what's even doper than that is working with the first black first lady. Michelle Obama is my ultimate favorite.
And she was putting in work. She was putting in work for the kids.
Work.
For the kids and
I
the
learned
parents.
So much from her. And Barack Obama is amazing. I mean, I think what it is that, like, it's a moment in history that, like, we read about, right? We read about who was marching with Martin Luther King. We read about who was, you know, there with when Frederick Douglass did this thing, right? But it's like it's a moment in current history, like it happens, and I could see it, and it was like my son gets to see these images of me with Air Force One, and pictures of me, and there's a picture of me like with Barack Obama and Michelle Obama like walking in Africa with the leaders out there and the president out there and on the tarmac, and you see me in the background with my earpiece in my ear. Like, it's an image that, like, now normally, like, most of those pictures don't exist because it's my role to not be in the picture. Like, the job of me is to get out of the shot. But there's a few shots that I'm in and to handle business. So, like, but there's a few shots that he gets to see. He has a, you know, Barack Obama wrote a book, a children's book.
Yep, I got it. It was through my old company, man, Random House. I got like 30 copies up in here, man.
So, like, as a gift for him, I actually got the president to sign it. So he has a signed copy from the president.
Ooh.
He also has a White House basketball. He has a bunch of stuff that, you know, pictures and things that he'll always be able to share. And it hit me when it was like, well, you know what? We don't have things that we pass down to generations. So that's something that I wanted to pass down to my children was, you know, this stuff. They also have this big plaque with this huge key on it. It doesn't open any doors, but this key to the city. But, like, working for the first black president, being first Black First Lady has been an honor. was an honor, and it was exhausting. Yeah. It was exhausting. It was a ton of work, but it was an honor to travel with them around the world. We went around the world traveling with them, so it was great. And also, working for, I mean, I was when I'm, people think, oh, you work for George Bush. Like, you do the math on that. I was still in college.
Yeah,
I worked for George Bush in school. I actually have a letter. I posted it up in my stories, but it was a letter from the White House to a professor saying, on behalf of the president of the United States, Jason needs to skip his midterm so he can go do this event with the president. Like, I have that. So, like, stuff like
that's
that. My dad was doing this in college. Like, yeah. I was traveling doing this
I got to take a step back and say that in some part, you're wrong, man. Like, you're wrong. You do have things to pass down to your son besides the picture. Like, you're passing down the lesson of, yo, it ain't always about the money. It's more about the impact. We could all get it. You could work a 9-to-5, do your overtime, take a second gig, take a third gig, you know, raise that bank account. But that doesn't mean you impact your community. So you're passing down that knowledge, bro. And that makes them richer than ever. Because the kid is going to be happy.
Once he gets a little older,
happy. Yeah.
And once he gets a little older, I want to have regular times where we volunteer. It's so important. The people that you see now that volunteer a lot, the people that used to, like, their parents used to drag them out and make them volunteer when they were young. But he'll be volunteering very early age. I want him to see me serving, and that these titles don't mean anything. Get in a position to serve. Whether you're making $100 million or you're making $100, you can always serve someone.
It's all about service, man. Like, people, you know, I had somebody at Dad 2.0, somebody really big in the dad space. You know, I won't name him because I want to choke him out sometimes. and he goes, James, you know, all these people coming over here to talk to you, man. What makes you special? You're just another influencer. And I looked at him and I go, Dawes, you think I'm an influencer? Like, that's cool. I like that you call me an influencer. But the real work gets done offline. And that's where we make our impact felt. Like, it's not like I don't go up there posting pictures of me and my kids doing things. I post pictures of me and my kids doing things along with fathers, where it's like I get dads to do things. Like, that's not an influencer. That's me going into a brand and telling the brand, yo, you want to give me free tickets to Jurassic Park? Yo, that's all lovely. You want to pay me for that? That's all lovely. I'm not taking that. Give me 20 free tickets for the dads and their kids.
Yep, that's what we did for Dad's 2.0. That's what makes it special. I reached out to Doug and I was like, hey, man. Like, you coming out to DC and your tickets are kind of expensive. So can we do this equity thing? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I want to make sure that there's some dads that could really use it that can't afford it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. So he gave me a set of tickets and we gave them out to some dads in this program. And they came out and the feedback that I got from these men, I shared with Doug. I was like, hey, like, these are men that don't have a lot of fathers around them. And they're not talking about fatherhood when they're together. Like, they said they came there both days.
Yeah.
They were there at the morning. They stayed all day long, and they were wearing the shirts. They were so excited to just be in the rooms with these guys that were talking about positive things and just being around it. It almost brought one of them to tears. So it was like this. That's exposure that we take for granted.
Yeah.
And we take that stuff for granted, and it's so important to be able to expose people to things like that. It's huge.
Those I took it for granted, man. And to be honest, it took you, a couple other people from our minority community, and then some of the people that you brought in through the Flip the Script campaign to the actual event to make me realize that I wasn't there at that conference to learn anything. Like, maybe I'm saying it wrong. I wasn't there to pick up things from the conference. I was actually there to serve people, because I kept talking to dads that you knew. And they're like, yo, I heard of you, but I never heard of this. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was like, it was real cool to be able to walk around with them and tell them, yo, you see that guy right there? Like, don't worry about it. He's a big dude, but you could go talk to him. Whereas, like, now we break the ice for them. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, now you get to actually not only go there and learn, but now you actually get to be part of this. And that's a huge deal, man. So thank you for bringing them, man. Thank you for bringing people.
Yeah, I'm glad they came out. Man, some people didn't come out, but a lot of folks that did got a lot of value from it, and they connected with a lot of different people. And it's just good to be in a space where you can be around. Cause I mean, you motivate me. I watch your content. I look at all your stories and I see you doing your thing for your family. Like, it's motivating. And I think one of the flaws that I have, right, I'll talk about people and not talk to them. Right.
Yeah.
So, like, positively. So I've talked about you a bunch. But like, I need to just tell you, like, yo, you the dopest. Like, you doing what you got to do for your family. You care enough about the work that you're doing to make sure that it's quality, that you're giving people the best. You putting others before yourself. Like this podcast is hard. People don't realize, like, they watch the manuscript show and they look at it and it's okay. You did the thing. People don't realize the number of hours that go into every single episode, how much editing goes into it, like the music, the sound, like the fact that you are even doing this step to help people is honorable. So I definitely thank you. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you for saying that, man. Cause as you know, sometimes we put our heads down, we get the work done and we forget. And yep. You know, that's the reason I show you so much love and respect, because you're doing things for people, putting yourself on the line. And I appreciate it because I know how hard it is, man. So, you know, there's some instances that some of the things that you're doing, some people ain't going to mess with it. And they're going to look at you and say, well, he's not coming to my spot. You know what I mean? And it's like, nah, I don't care. I'm not doing it for you anyway. I'm doing it for my people. And that's what makes fatherhood dope, where you could actually come in and inspire others and educate others without worrying about what's going to happen to you. You know, how much money.
And on top of that. And on top of that, like being in a place to where like you running, right? So you can do whatever you have an ID for. I'm in a system. I'm in a government box that, like, the mayor said when I first started, she's like, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? I want fresh ideas. I want new things. So like the things that we're doing is not government. We had an episode about infidelity and cheating. Yeah. Like, when have you heard that out of government? Like,
you don't. About, and that's why we need you there. That's why we need you there.
I walked in first. We're like, you want to put a bunch of black men and Hispanic men on buses? And they were like, what? They're like, what? You want to do what? Like, that doesn't even make it. Like, why would you spend money to do that? Like, that's what I want to do. So the mayor's like, oh, a great idea. Let's run with it. So like even if she's not like in the because she can't be. There's 198 commissions that exist within DC government. For 702,000 people that live out here, she can't be at every fatherhood event. She can't go to every single event or every single thing we do. But she empowers me to be able to know what the needs of the community are. And one thing I didn't get done right, I was like, I want to have a. It's not. I said, the black boys don't have any cartoons that represent them. I want to make a cartoon. They were like, what? Like, yep, I'm gonna make a cartoon. I'm gonna put it on TV.
So is that next? Is that next? Is that coming up?
I took it off the list. I took it off the list. It was around like the.
It's coming back.
Somebody to do it. I might come back. It was just like the ideas I had was like, you know what? Instead of having a cookout, we're going to have a field day. We're going, you know, and the organizations that need more volunteers are going to run the game so they can connect with the people more. I'm like, you know what? We had an event. I want a dunk tank. They were like, you want a dunk tank? I'm like, yeah, a dunk tank. And I'm going to put all the senior leadership in the tank. I got the chief of staff, right? Check it out. He's now the deputy mayor of, but he's the chief of staff to the mayor. This guy is like everywhere the mayor is. He's right there. He is literally in charge of everybody. All the employees in DC. I hit him up and said, hey man, I got this dunk tank and I want you to sit in it. He was like, what? And he came out and he sat in the dunk. I didn't ask the mayor because it just doesn't make sense for like security wise for her to be in that position. But I asked him and he sat in the dunk tank. I asked the deputy chief of staff, he sat in the dunk tank. I asked the head of HR, the guy who hires and fires everybody in here and does all the coaching for all the staff. I asked him, he said the dunk tank. You know how many people lined up to sit in that dunk tank? I mean, to throw at him.
They wanted him.
So many people. They wanted him back. And what we did was, it wasn't just a dunk tank. Every ball you threw, it was an 1 hour of volunteer service that you were planning to give to one of the organizations that were here that serve black and brown boys of color. Black and brown boys. So, like, we had hundreds of balls thrown that day in which we wrote down, here are the people who committed. You committed to 4 hours. Here are the organizations you can do your 4 hours to. And it was hundreds of community service hours that were given in one day simply because some folks in Mayor Bowser's staff decided to sit in a dunk tank.
I love it. It seems to me like they found the right person, bro. And you. I'm talking in regards to you. Like, you could get some people to do some crazy things.
Yeah. Like, it's just like,
that's dope as hell.
So it was fun to do. We made a difference. And it wasn't in this government box. It wasn't in the box of, like, we have to have this, you know, panel discussion talking about, you know, initiatives. It was like, okay, how do we reach the most people in a way that we think they're going to show up? Like, we, you know, it was, it's, that stuff is important. We have these kind of dialogue that, in the dialogue of the manuscript show, it's like we're talking about fatherhood after 20 years of incarceration. We're talking about trauma after gun violence. And it's not like professional. These are like real men that have dealt with it, that come on the show and talk about it, in which we have like a therapist on every single episode, but we have real men that have cheated on their spouses and feel terrible about it, that are now saying like, this is where I messed up. This is what I should have done.
And they want to talk like, about it. Yeah, they want to talk about it.
Yeah. To thousands of people that are watching. This stuff goes out on the mayor's page. Thousands of people that watch this thing.
And that's not traditional politics at all.
And it's not traditional politics. I don't operate the way I operate strategically and what's the best for people. Mm-hmm. And if that's me doing a rap cypher, which I did, it was hard getting some boys to come to some of our events. Like, you know what? Let's figure out what boys want. Boys want to rap? Okay, we're going to have a rap cypher. We brought in two people that are in the industry, the music industry, like high up in the industry. I think Trader Mayer came out and DJ, slipping my mind, but one of the DJs in the DC area that like pictures of them in the studio with Nipsey, and, you know, they came out, talked about like, if you're serious about this life, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to focus on it. And, you know, and how important school is and all those things. And then I had a camera crew come out. My man, Trevor, came out and he put up cameras and equipment and lighting. And we had like the BET rap cipher in which the boys got a chance to get on a microphone and like rap. And we had a video and it was amazing. And they didn't think that just because I'm the executive director or something, I wasn't about to go in. I went in.
No mercy. No mercy.
No mercy. And I was the best one there.
No mercy. You see,
the director of African American Affairs, who don't rap, she got in and she rapped. And what it was like a fun experience. And it was just that. But the next time we host an event, guess who shows up? All of those boys who know us, who trust us, who laugh with us, who had a good time with us. And Mayor Bowser is about building relationships, not just about throwing resources at people. Mm-hmm. So that's why some of the stuff we do works and connects with residents so well.
I love it, man. You know, I tell people all the time, the real work happens offline. It's not like the Instagrammable moments and things like that. Yeah. Even though you can take a picture and throw it on Instagram, the real work is happening right there at the present time.
Right there at the present time.
Yeah, and it works, man. It works, especially with the youth. You got to find a way that, you know, that's relatable. So what?
Yeah.
So now people want to, I'm pretty sure after they hear this, they're going to be like, man, James, I know you don't mess with politics, but I do. Like, how do they contact you, man?
Yeah, so they can contact the Office on Fathers, Men, and Boys. You know what? Let's just the best way to reach out, right, is either email or social media, right? If it's email, it's cfmb@dc.gov. But the fastest way to get us is on Instagram, on Twitter, and it's DC_MOFMB. DC underscore Mayor's Office on Fathers, Men, and Boys, MOFMB. And they'll be able to, if you DM us, I'll be surprised if you don't get a response in the next 15, 20 minutes. It's our team is big on responding to when people reach out to us. If it's me personally, it's Jason Wallace DC on Instagram. So that's how you get a hold of us on Twitter, Instagram, and me personally. But I'm always happy to reach out and help and figure out what I can do and make sure we move the needle on these things.
Yeah, I hope people follow both you and the mayor's office. You know, one thing about your Instagram account that got me really upset was that you put up the Baby Shark song, man. And now it's stuck in my head again all day today. And with my kids being here, I don't even want to thank you for it, bro.
how many followers you got?
I got about
a million, right?
On Instagram, I have 11,000. On the email, it's probably like another 10. And that's really it. Twitter is where, you know, I'm that forgotten guy. Like, I don't get follows, but when people see me, they're like, yo, I know you.
Nah, you got a lot more followers. I got way less than you. I got like 1,000 or 1,200 personally. So I got something. So I need to get my.
Nah, you know how it is, though, man. Numbers don't matter, bro.
Numbers don't matter for nothing. But the thing of it, I told, I have to do a performance oversight hearing, right? Which is essentially me on TV and the council grilling me on what I did for the whole year, making sure that I'm adequately using taxpayer dollars as they should.
Yeah.
Right. And he asked me, what was one of the biggest lessons I learned of the year? And I don't want to, you know, I'm sorry. And I told him that in government, we focus too much on numbers. Yeah. And in, even in nonprofit world, right, the more number of people that come into the door that we help, that the more money we can get later. Or in government, it's the more people, you know, and we have these events, right? We had one event that had 500 people, right? And that looks good on paper, but it was less impactful because I wasn't able to talk to people or engage with people. Yeah. People couldn't engage with each other, which is people coming out by them, with their families and doing something and leaving. When we have a, when we have an engagement event with 20 people there, it's way more impactful.
You talk to everybody.
But it's like, you talk to everybody, people get to connect with each other. It's more impactful. So I shared with him is that like that sometimes I have to ignore the numbers and do something that I know won't bring 500 people out, that'll only bring 50 people out, but those 50 people will be impacted for a longer time. That's what I learned the most. So the numbers thing on Instagram and all that kind of stuff, like if we had, you know, 50,000 followers, I wouldn't be able to, I couldn't say like, hey, James, tell them to just DM us. We respond to everybody. Yeah. We couldn't respond to that many people.
And you wouldn't know who sent you a picture. You wouldn't even know who sent you a picture. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Now, everybody that sends us, if you DM me, I know exactly who you are. When I see you at an event, like, hey, I know you from this. Maybe people are surprised that I know them because they sent a picture over because I went to their page and I highlight their stuff. And like, it's a real person looking at this. It's not a bot or a machine. Yeah. I'm the director of the agency, and it's important. I don't do Twitter because I just don't like it. Yeah. But I go on Instagram.
It's toxic. It's toxic.
And I actually connect with people, and when I see them in the community, I remind them where we met. They're like, oh, I'm surprised that you would know who I was. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Sent this picture over. It was you and your kid, and you was here and there. And yeah, we talked. We and you went back and forth.
Because
like, that was you. I thought that was somebody else. Like, no, that was me. Yeah. That was me. They're like, oh, okay.
It was really
somebody
you.
Else at the Dad 2.0 Summit. He reached out, hey, is there any way you can give us a ticket to the Dad 2.0 Summit? I responded in 3 minutes. I was like, yep, here yeah. we go. Man. Like being able to reach and touch folks and being small enough to do that is always a benefit. But yeah, man,
it's manageable, bro. Like for me, you know, the only real reason I don't focus on numbers is because I've been an entrepreneur for 10 years now, and I've seen the rise of the internet. And, you know, I know friends that have created bots and created services for Instagram people where you pay $10 a day or $10 a week and you get a 1,000 followers a week. So I know that, you know, I don't look at it because of that knowledge, but also I don't look at it because I'm so heads down that if I look up and I see somebody else with 100,000 followers doing something that people deem cool when it didn't really happen, it throws me off. Like I just learned, I know myself now. I don't want to look at these people with 70, 80,000 followers that aren't really doing anything, getting love and then making me feel like I didn't do anything. Like I was worthless. So I stay away from it. I stay away from it because that's what, you know, I say it all the time. You know, I know a lot of people feel that I'm coming at them, but I say it all the time. I don't sell t-shirts. I don't do merchandise. I create impact. The people that are selling t-shirts, they need the 70,000 followers. They need the million followers because they need 1% of that to actually buy their shirt. I don't need that. Like I keep my pockets full working with brands.
And, no, we want a shirt though, James. You got to give us a shirt, man.
I'll send you one, man. You know, you said send me the DM with the size, and I got you, bro.
No, I got to, and legally I got to pay for it, but we'll talk about it.
Oh, I got a cool for that.
We are having a fatherhood conference coming up, and I would love for you to be a part of it. I'm thinking that you can either come out and speak, or you can actually host live podcast right there on the site on site, and we'll cover everything for you.
Yo, let's
love to have you come out.
Let's talk about it, man. Because I'm bringing the crew out there to DC. We wanted to do a little mini event with Squat for Change and the Black Fathers Foundation. You know, maybe we could do something even bigger, man. Like, we'll definitely talk.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. So once again, Jason, man, thank you so much for your time. You almost got me wanting to work with politics. Almost. I'm gonna take it easy and still stay on my side because I could curse and do craziness. But thank you once again for your time, bro. I truly, truly appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you for having me.
To the community, we have good people fighting for our rights as dads in the government. Jason Wallace just proved that we do. We need more people like him putting in the groundwork, and that person might even be you. Keep making your presence felt. You just never know where it will take you. Heck, I have a friend in the mayor's office now. Couldn't have happened if I didn't put myself out there. Fatherhood is lit.